Good evening. It's Wednesday night, it's 7 o'clock, and it's time for the Joy of Sacrifice. We're getting down the road now. We're on sacrifice number 5, and we're working our way through the book, The Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold. These practices, and particularly the individual sacrifices, are cumulative. And you'll notice that under each of the sacrifices, people have actually put comments down about how they see it and how they plan on achieving these sacrifices. Over this coming weekend, I'll be listing, particularly on the previous sacrifice, which was number 4. Sacrifice number 4 is sacrifice of ordinary life. I'm going to be posting some technique there. Once again, it's on the website, wingsofchaos.com. And you'll see each sacrifice is laid out, briefly described. And then on the previous one, there's also a sound file of that class. So, there you have it. Now, to get started, I would really like us to just take a moment and arrive at the class, take your time to actually get here. And if you're speeding in from somewhere else, leave that at the door if you're able to. And maybe to help us do that, I'm going to read something. We read this about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's worth reading again. So focus on what I'm saying, and that'll just be like a carrier wave for us to get to where we need to go. Okay? Okay. Are you ready? Let's begin. In motion, bowing, my presence comes to thee. Humbly, with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee. With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee. With pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. With yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. In ignorance, my presence serves thee. In contemplation, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. In mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. In form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. So, Ivan, where are we? So we're on sacrifice 5. It's on page 185. And the sacrifice is entitled The Sacrifice of Tendencies, Life of Ritual. It's an interesting thing to see how the author has constructed these chapters. The book was written over 30 years ago, so when we read the chapters, they're still very much alive. And it's curious how the chapters are constructed. So chapter, or this particular sacrifice number 5, let's begin, and once again, it's sacrifice of tendencies, life of ritual. And yet, here is the opening paragraph. When we are with an individual who is in the corridor of madness, we must be able to be with that individual continually without falling asleep. In the corridor of madness, it is not a matter of what one does or knows, but remaining awake throughout the experience. Sacrifice of tendencies. The next paragraph. We must learn to be constant to the task or work, This is something which must be cultivated within oneself. It is the imaginary ability that holds one down, for it prevents the real ability from being developed. If we believe we already know how to do something, like if we believe that we are already awake, guess what? It's hard to put in that effort, isn't it? Okay, so the first couple of paragraphs is talking about consistency. How does that relate to sacrifice of tendencies? Ivan, help me out. Somebody else, who can help me out here? Sacrifice of tendencies, and he begins with this concept of consistency. I moved here to Grass Valley area in 1986, and one of the first things that I did, other than mow a lot of lawns, was I was asked to help Blair. Blair was dying at the time. He had advanced cancer and decided that he was no longer going to take chemotherapy because it debilitated him. There was no life to it. So he chose to cease the treatment, and the cancer advanced and he declined quite rapidly. But during that period of time, there were a number of watch periods where I was assigned to help him. And, you know, sometimes, you know, a number of people, different people help. And there was one person that was particularly good at it. It was Adelheid. You remember
right.
Adelheid?
Yes.
And I learned a great deal from her at the time that the job was simply to be there and to do what Blair wanted done. I'd like some water. Can you adjust my pillow? I'm a little cold. I think I'm hungry now. That's it. It wasn't to inject anything into the space. It wasn't to add to it or to give him something. It wasn't to change his mind and help him because he needed help.
Mm-hmm.
He, at that moment, was the voyager. The voyager at that period of time is the one in transit. Transit is the moment when we're moving from the dominance of the historical personality, the machine, the sleeping machine, into a little bit of the life of the essential self. Okay? So when we work in that way, all we're asked do, as it said in the first couple of paragraphs, is consistency, constancy, to be awake. That's all. We're not asked to do, guide, or change the person who is in the corridor of madness, as it's indicated. We had a discussion of that a few weeks ago, of what that is and how it applies at our level of work and what we're doing. And it was interesting. And there's a couple of very interesting posts which I'm going to read in a moment. But I'm just orienting us in a little way to this chapter. It's, once again, what's sacrifice?
Sacrifice of tendencies.
Sacrifice of tendencies. And the subtitle is Life of Ritual. So let's think about that. Go ahead.
Well, it's an interesting association.
Yes, it is.
Because what you're talking about, with you're assigning this the names here to the person who's going through the corridor of madness is in voyager, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that makes you, if you are the attendant, if you are the helper, companion in that space, that makes you the guide.
We can posit the word guide.
Possibly guide with a small g, perhaps. But you know, that brings a lot of associations to my mind in regard to that, both sacrifice and tendencies and the ritual, the life of ritual.
Yes.
In other words, the to me, there's a link there because the guide is constrained not to be a person, in a sense, not to be a personality.
Not to be a personality.
The guide has a service to perform, and so the service, what is it, the job makes the man or woman in that case, the service calls for the sacrifice of tendencies. Because I can't actually
serve.
Well, I can't serve. I can't be myself and be a guide. I'm invoking another persona. I'm invoking another force or something.
Another force.
An energy. You know, there's an attention and presence that's required, let's say, in our terminology, to do this job. And in other words, I'd be interested to know, say, what did you find that Adelheid was capable of, or what was that I had skills at that you were unfamiliar with?
It was so simple for her to simply be in this space.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't need anything other than that. She didn't require recognition. It wasn't necessary for her to impose her philosophy on Blair. She didn't need to say, you should be doing this. She didn't have to read the prayers of her own personal religion, should there have been one. She was able to just say and serve his requests at the time. Now, it's a rare space, because in that space, Blair knew where what was occurring. He was in the dying process. He was approaching permanence. And for him, he was in a particular form of clarity. And he had work on himself. He had done a lot of work on self. He had background. So he was definitely hanging out the time on the other side of the veil.
Yeah, he did a lot of work with Shah.
DJ here, and so that's part of the concept. Now let's take a moment. I want to read two posts that were on the website wingsofchaos.com, and and it's the joy of sacrifice. After that, you get to the website. The menu is pretty straightforward. This one is written by Aria, and I find it very, very helpful. I am eagerly awaiting the discussion of this chapter. Recently, I've had some issues arise and felt much like being in a corridor. And I did indeed feel as though I were going mad. I had to relinquish many ordinary tasks and, being mostly alone, have had to rely on rituals and daily exercises to keep me as awake as possible from falling back into my tendencies, and that I woke at the same time every day and did all my exercises in what came to be a particular or ritualized order and spread throughout the day, which kept me from falling back into my tendencies and succumbing as the emotions, fears, and madness would rise to overtake me, and many times I lost. It is a difficult struggle, very much like trying to stay awake while driving. When the sleep comes so subtly, you don't realize it until you jolt awake again. Either 1 second asleep, or 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day, or 1 week.
Or about one lifetime.
Or unfortunately,
or several.
It's that.
David.
Go ahead, Simon.
Yeah, no, that is very apropos, that comment that you just read, because I was just thinking in my experience, what will be, besides that we have been talking about, not to really be of service and not really putting much of our sleep in whatever that person may need in the corridor of madness. But I was just thinking in the aspect of the ritual, which is so much present in the sacrifice. And I relate very much to that comment because really in moments, in those moments, I will say when you go with that kind of organized ritual or behavior, let's say, it's like in the tempest when you're in huge storms, you just are going by the book. I don't know if it makes sense.
Okay.
It's like you don't improvise, you're just going by the book, stick to your rules. And I see rituals in that way that keep me grounded in situations which is so much need to just stay focused and balanced.
That seems to be what Arya was referring to in the ritual. I mean, I have a tendency, I guess, my whole background, prepares me to think that rituals are empty rituals. The rituals are something by rote or learned, memorized, and not meaningful, and so on. But there, I think this is the proper use of ritual. We're talking about the meaning of ritual here, or an appropriate use of ritual, which is to banish, actually, anxiety, for example, what Ari was talking about, to banish chaos, anxiety, personal uncertainty, negative emotion, down spiraling of energy, and so on. You know, ritual can be used to galvanize your attention, galvanize your presence in the space. And there is a connection between ritual and service.
Yeah.
Between use of ritual and having, assuming a cloak, let's say, or uniform of a person, the cloak of paying attention to someone else.
Well, here's the difficulty that has been introduced to us by the author E.J. Gold. He doesn't tell us what the rituals are. He doesn't say what to do. What does that mean? That means...
Go ahead.
What's that? So Molly says we have to find the ritual for ourselves. Ritual contains...
The structure that contains chaos. Provides a structure.
Now I'm ready to read the second posting. This one is by Eric Peterson. I am working with transforming my house into a work chamber. Quote, and we'll see this in the next paragraph. Sleep, dress, eating, movement, and toilet are all performed as ritual purification. Eric continues. 1. I will keep my house very, very clean to raise the vibratory level and create a temple. 2. I will create a ritual for each of these 5 activities that involves doing something differently from the way I tend to do it, using external but invisible props such as jewelry, gesture, intentional mood, and a thought form for that particular activity so that it becomes a prayer or a sacred play. And so this is the portability of this work.
That's a very good summary right there. I mean,
it's portable because you need to devise the ritual. of your normal tendencies. It doesn't mean you have to be strange, odd, or weird, or unusual, but it does mean that you impose on yourself a ritual that, in a sense, you can go to. At that moment, that ritual becomes a reminding factor of our life and the essential self. We begin to sense the difference of living in the mechanicality of the machine and becoming something different called the essential self. Gradually, 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 we're moving in that direction. So Eric has pointed out the area in which he is doing it. But the ritual could be anything. For instance, maybe you're going to do something like, before you eat, you're going to wash your hands. So you take and you're going to go do that, but you do it with the knowledge you're doing that to create a cleanliness, so that the energy you're bringing into your body from eating is sanctified in a certain way.
Right, and it's physical, I mean literal cleanliness, but it's also ritual purification, ritual cleanliness. And there are correspondings to this, that in the Passover Seder, you start out with the washing hands,
hand washing,
and it's typically with a family sitting around a big table to do the Passover Seder. The standard way of doing this is actually a bowl of water and a towel
that
is brought
around.
That goes around. Yeah, and you probably, everyone has, in fact, generally everyone's already washed the hands, washes their hands.
Before they come to the room.
Yeah, before sitting down at the table. But, you know, to begin the Passover Seder, because it's a ritual observance and a prescribed set of prayers and rituals, you know, wine drinking, food tastings, and so on, that you're going to do in a certain order and with certain texts and all that. But you literally start out by going through the motion of washing your hands.
And you literally...
Because it's a cleansing. It's a banishing to start the event.
Okay, so here's the key. You've already washed your hands and you're clean. No big deal. Then we go to then ritually wash your hands in this particular case during the Seder. But then you are reminded by the circumstance, in a sense, why you're washing your hands then. Right? So your sensitivity is brought into higher purpose at that moment. So it's the combination of taking a particular action and blending it with the sensitivity of the essential, of working with the essential self.
Okay.
You're doing it for the higher at that point.
Yeah. So there's an intention involved.
You bring in an intention when you begin the activity. And when you begin that activity, you can sense the motion of it. As someone was saying to me earlier today, when he senses himself going into transit, there's a particular form of a fear.
Right. Emphasize with that.
and that when that is occurring, we're moving from the mechanicality of the historical personality and starting to approach the land of the essential self. And we're afraid of that. We're giving up the territory that we're so comfortable in, called the mechanicality of the machine. Okay?
And so that's exactly where we're a habit.
Yeah.
That's ingrained in the self.
So if we interrupt the mechanicality, not just with saying, oh, I'm going to wash my hands, and that in itself, the performance of the physical act is not the ritual.
Yeah, right. This is, you know, there's a wonderful bit in the Hasidic. Yeah,
we
Gatta says you really need to do hand washing. Yeah, could somebody bring some water?
The
in the Hasidic tradition that I'm not that familiar with, but there's a wonderful book that Rep Zalman wrote years ago called The First Step, you know, which is about, basically this book is about Zalman Shachter Shalopi, a rabbi who's almost single-handedly responsible for what they call the Jewish Renaissance or the Jewish Revival, like in the 60s and 70s. And he, you know, he was all about, he's a very traditional, old-fashioned European Hasidic rabbi, and storyteller, and, you know, marvelous man, marvelous character. But he, as a teacher of other rabbis and as a teacher of this Hasidic tradition, he was all about reviving the fervor, you know, the meaningfulness of these rituals for modern people for whom had the attitude like me, let's say growing up, you know, or whatever, in a Jewish family, that it's, and the ritual is empty, you know, you just have to go to church or you have to go to a synagogue and you say these prayers by rote, and it's a language that you had to study when you were 13 and you don't know what it means anymore and so on. And but what Reb Zalman wrote a marvelous thing, which actually I've remembered for years, in this, I'm pretty sure it's in The First Step, or maybe he wrote a couple of books on this subject, but he brought up a term, there's a term in Hebrew that's called kavana, which translates roughly as intention. It's the inner state or the inner wish or intention that goes along with any prayer or any ritual. And basically what Reb Zalman was presenting, especially to very young people who were wanting, you know, not empty services and rituals and so on, but something meaningful or something they could, you know, emotionally relate to or whatever. You know, he basically said that modern people have lost this inner meaning, the actual purpose of rituals and prayers, because there is, besides the hand washing, besides the washing of the hands in the water, which is the external manifestation, there is an inner intention, what
that
he
begins
kavana. Well, that's necessary. That needs to be happening.
And as
the two things have to be happening at once, or it's not a prayer.
It's not a prayer. It's not a ritual.
Yeah.
And actually, Aria in her posting is implying that. She's starting to imply that. So,
well, but it also suggests very strongly how that would banish another state. You know, a personality issue. You know, an anxiety, a fear, you know, something that's out of control. I mean, because you're summoning this intention deliberately, it's an act of will.
But the ritual begins with the summoning of that intention, the summoning of the intention for the higher. I'm going to read the last few paragraphs, because it's in context now. I'm on page 187, the bottom of the page. To make this sacrifice, one lives a completely ritualized existence. Context, this sacrifice being sacrifice of
dependency,
right? To make this sacrifice, one lives a completely ritualized existence, making all obligatory observances and purifications. Continuing, one wears vestments at all times, and eats only special food which has been dedicated and blessed. One sits in the temple while eating. Food is taken within the sanctuary of the holy ark. One performs vigil with this food. Sleep, dress, eating, movement, and toilet are all performed as ritual purification. One is obligated only to perform rituals and may not work for the household in ordinary tasks. When I read this very, very last paragraph, I was hoping that there was somebody that had a Jewish background.
Why?
Because I was hoping that somebody could tell Ivan?
No, I beg off.
Anybody could tell us a little bit about one wears vestments at all times. What would that mean? If you were a hot suit, for instance, you would wear the tallest.
Yeah.
And that's That's a shawl. And in some form it's worn under your regular clothes.
You can see the knotting, there's
a specific name for that as well. Because when they're making it, those that make it are praying into it. They knot it with prayer.
Right.
And eat only special food. I would hope someone could tell me what it means, this is kosher means.
It means blessed by a rabbi,
but it means in a kosher environment, like a kosher kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
What if your kitchen became a sacred event? Because when you cook your food, you're cooking to provide the energetic for your work life.
It's very fundamental.
Yeah. Or if you go in there just quickly to make a hungry man TV dinner, that may be different. It's possible.
And now we have the prayer over the TV dinner. Well, I like what Eric was saying. I think that, you know, in all fairness, what, you know, Eric is talking about creating an environment in which you're not likely to bring in a TV dinner. Because, you know, you're purifying the environment. And I think that sounds like a terrific plan, Eric, if you're out there. I mean, I was going to say, in my current lifestyle, I can really relate to this. In my current lifestyle as a householder, I would say I'm very disorderly, and it would be a very difficult task for me to create this much purification in my environment. But it is absolutely true that when we clean our house, when we clean a living room, when we clean the stairs, when we clean the bedroom, when we clean the kitchen, especially when we clean a bathroom, there's a different, there's a better vibration.
You're aware, and
there's a much different vibration in the spaces.
Ivan.
Yes.
I think what they call it is to make the environment holy. To make
right.
it holy, whatever you are doing, whether the kitchen, the clothes, your acts, they become holy because they are dedicated to the divine.
Particularly if when you go to do the process of cleaning, you're injecting that intention into the act. You're recalling it. So Eric has said that he's going to create a ritual for each of these five activities. So it will be interesting to see if he enlightens us later with how the ritual then operates in one of the five, and just maybe expands on his commentary. How does the ritual work, for instance, in maybe eating, movement within the house, or when he goes getting ready for rest? How does it operate exactly? You know, so, and this is how we help each other out, because we're going to create our own ritual when we're doing these things. But how do you create that ritual? It's so simple. It's too simple for the ordinary mind. Okay? It's too simple for the ordinary mind, and you just have to do it. So you look at your day and you think, well, what do you do every day? What's the sort of thing that you do every day? And I say, find ways to interrupt that with ritual as you go through that life. Maybe you're a tree trimmer, and you know, you drive to the clients with your equipment and you do this. Well, maybe there's a particular act that's essential to every one of your jobs that becomes you make it into a ritualistic act by injecting this intention into it. And then, in a sense, that job becomes an offering to the higher.
Good. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. So, remember, our intention here is not philosophical. our intention is to understand ways and means to do our work here. We're getting guidance from Eric and from Aria. We're looking for ways and means to inject these principles into our daily life so that we can begin to operate in the world of sacrifice. Okay?
Yeah, that somehow, David, reminds me in the beginning of this when you talk about the consecration of what you are going to sacrifice.
Good.
And this is exactly the same. It's a sacrament. You are consecrating the activity or the elements that you are going to offer. It's very common, too, to bless the food or to be thankful for whatever you're going to eat and make a moment. There are different episodes in the daily life that we do that.
Right. And Gianna brought up the question here, what are we going to make a ritual? What are we going to choose to be a ritual? Well, I mean, I remember years ago at a certain time when somebody, you know, there was an issue, some incident in our community here where somebody was seeming to not behave well, or, you know, to be having anxiety or to be a little out of control. And I remember very clearly a suggestion being made, well, have that person get up in the morning and start out by making your bed. Have that person make his bed and do it with intention.
Yeah.
Because that's a ritual, and that is a gesture of orderliness, let's say, or cleanliness that you would do on first arising in the morning. So, in other words, like where do you start to create a ritual or to order, bring order into your life, or to counteract your tendencies? You know, that would be, for me, this would be also counteracting tendencies. Like, okay, get up in the morning, make the bed, do something for cleanliness. You know?
Yeah. So this is something. Mm-hmm. This, all these chapters are, all these 19 sacrifices, all they really are, they're hints and suggestions. The genius, we can help each other understand what we think it means. Okay? We can work with each other and help each other understand, gosh, this is what I think ritual is. This is what I think sacrifice of tendencies is. But applying it into your own individual daily life, that's your own personal genius. And there's the creative effort of doing it. I tell you, that can only come from one place. It can only come from your essential creativity. And you'll find how that works for you. You'll find it. Spend a little bit of time sanctifying a particular act. Okay?
Let's have some comments out there. What are the comments?
From who does? Yeah. So the initial invocation of the day is very difficult. Of course it is, because we're late. You know, and you wake, you know, in
damn birds are singing.
The damn birds are singing. In oddly enough, this flips through the three riddles of Lady Turandot from the opera.
That ritual I'm not familiar with.
What arises, what is born each night and is dies each morning? The answer is hope. You know, you go to bed with all these hopes. You wake up and, oh my gosh, you've got all this to do. And interrupt that is what they're saying. Interrupt it. Interrupt it with a moment of ritual. Maybe it's how you put your shoes on. You know, and you notice, I tell you, here's the deal. If we start actually paying attention to something, it becomes alive. Let's say you wear shoes that actually tie. because it's becoming more and more rare, and there might even be people that don't aren't able to tie shoes anymore because they have what's it called?
Velcro.
That may be the case, or nothing whatsoever. But so let's say you go and you're going to tie your shoes, but you watch yourself do it, and you'll begin. And you say, this is going to become my holy act. And you start imbuing with this intention and the attention. You start discovering a great deal about it. And you might discover that you're placing these shoes to launch your day. And guess what? If you do that enough, those shoes on your feet will be imbued with that. That sense of ritual all day long.
Right.
At first, you're just going to pretend, oh yeah, this is my ritual. Oh yeah, I kind of feel it. But then if you allow more and more time, it can rise to the level of a prayer. And you will notice that. You'll notice, you look down there and you see those shoes, you go, wow.
They're still there.
They're still there, but it has that extra edge of meaning. That's an example that might work for you. What's exciting is for each of us to share that moment of prayer ritual that we have developed. It will help other people find one or the one that works for them. I've always mentioned a number of times I carry, and I've got many, many, many stories about it, but I carry a coin in my pocket. The silver dollar. I've carried one for many years.
Right.
You know, about 10 years ago, I had to give it up because our friend Mary Craigie was dying, and it turned out I didn't have a car at the time. And she said, "Well, I'd like you to have my car." And I said, "Well, I need to give you something, but I don't have very much money now." And I said, "What can I give you of value?" Well, she knew about this act of me carrying this coin, which I do certain magic with. And she says, "Well, how about..." I picked it out of my pocket, and I said, "How about this?" She says, "That's payment in full."
For the car, right?
Because she knew what it meant. She knew what it meant. So I had to begin a few years ago with a new coin. But every time I touch that coin, even if my hand bounds into my pocket looking for my keys, and I just touch it ever so slightly, I remember. And I remember that sense of self. Okay? And you can too.
So, yeah, ritual.
I could, David and Ivan. Hello?
Yeah, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, no, one thing that I do in... one thing that I often do is the blessing of the table before I eat.
Okay.
Whatever I eat, so I somehow make that moment sacred for, you know, thanking for the food that I can put in my table. But for the kind of line of work that I have, there are at least an hour that I dedicate, that I consecrate that hour of work. And I work with many people at the same time, so I cannot promise that I will do it for more than an hour. but I dedicate that hour of work to make it as holy as I can.
Well, one thing, and is it the same hour every day? Simon, is it the same hour?
Yes. If it is, it is, usually it's the same hour.
Which hour is it?
It's when I arrive into a place in which I start interacting with people.
Okay, so it's not like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 10 a.m.?
Yeah, it is at around 2 in the afternoon.
So at 2 in the afternoon, Toronto time,
yes,
that will begin. Right?
Yeah, two in the afternoon, that is what I dedicate that hour, if with that intention.
Now, if you do this enough, and it becomes a true intended ritual for you, if you take and you stop doing it, or you're not able to do it, you will notice that. It will be, you'll notice it missing from your life.
Yes.
Are there any comments that we should be reading onto the tape, Simon?
Well, there are... I think the last one was read by Molly, right?
Well, go ahead and read a couple.
Okay. Admiridaya says, I would do it with focused attention, carefully, with respect for that object I was dealing with.
Very good.
That's Agni. And it has been, I got a few comments too from, I cannot go read before, but it has to do a lot with intent, what you guys were talking about.
Go ahead, read those.
Following the comment that Aurea did before, Quattle, I think it was Gregory, says, so it would be a shift from having a tendency to do things into doing things intentionally.
Yes.
Now, that is the life of ritual. The tendencies of life are sacrificed and then ritualized.
Yeah, let me make a comment here. That's a very good point. So what it's, we're not living in a monastic life, most of us on this chat right now. We're not living in such an environment. And we may not be able to change all of our life, but I maintain that it's highly probable that you can change moments. Like, 2 o'clock, you're going to do this thing for 1 hour. Or you tie your shoes in a particular way. So the broad brush thinking of, I'm going to change all my tendencies with ritual is not the intent here. We start where we can start. Okay? We start where we're able to start. Maybe it's one thing.
That would come under the category there that's at the beginning of that chapter, which is that to imagine, to have imaginary abilities. I mean, to imagine that I can be awake all the time, and imagine that I can operate as an essential self all day.
Start
are going to be imaginary.
Start with one thing, and it'll infect everything you do. But do one thing, and do it with great intention and attention. Okay.
Molly says, I will leave the complex rituals to environments where those rituals are part of the context. At home, I need to stay simple.
Good. Definitely.
Very well.
Right. I think that's the nature of that service to another that David was talking about at the beginning of this hour, you know, that the nature of that simple presence of being a guide to someone, being a companion, someone in the corridor of madness, someone dying, a child, I think that's another orientation, I think, in regard to the sacrifice of tendencies, to be to cultivate service, to be in a position where to be of service to others who you're working with, and then I think this is going to work against energy, work against my thing.
Sure, it will be. Sure.
What's the question? What if you have OCD? Some people, their tendency might be to have rituals all the time.
No.
And to get away from their tendencies,
no.
You have to get away from rituals.
No. No, that's...
Okay, that wasn't the point.
Who wrote that? Who? Simon?
Sorry?
Can you read the one from Kuwaitl about the space?
The space is a womb. The space is a womb that we impregnate with our intent. Attention is the seminal fluid. The sacred is the child that it is born. Ritual is the process.
So,
is that the one?
Yeah, that's the one. So, each time that we're able to do that, we change the space. So we have to figure out how to do it. It's very particular to each of us. That's the
true
beauty of it.
Well, your life, a day in the life.
A day in the life.
The pool of each of us.
Yeah.
Is going to be a different day. It's going to be a different life.
Great comment. I don't know who that is. Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Also, I think, David, I've probably brought this up here before, maybe in one of the practical work on self sessions, but for those who aren't aware of this or who haven't come across it, at the end, one of the appendices of EJ's book, The Autobiography of the Sufi, which is from this period or even earlier, or it's around this same period of his teaching and writing process, there are a list of exercises, there are daily exercises, and those were actually, when I first came across this school, this book, this teaching, I got my hands on that, and those were some of the first exercises that I tried out that convinced me, you know, that E.J. Gold was a teacher or was an author who I should be interested in. And in other words, you know, many times E.J. has said, when people ask him what is his lineage and what are his credentials, and he says, here's practical work on self, here are the exercises, do this, these are my credentials,
period.
And that's it. You know, come back, if it works for you, then come back and talk to me. Or, you know, if it doesn't...
If that generates a question, then,
yeah,
then
well,
come back.
The point is that the journey is a destination, is another statement of that. But, you know, for example, one of those exercises in there, it's called the prayer hands exercise, and it's very brief, and, you know, it's too simple for the human mind, as they suggested. When you get up in the morning, as soon as you can remember to do it, the first act that you do and you try to do in the morning for some, you know, whether you do that for a week or a month or a year or whatever, is you put your hands together in an attitude of prayer. It's not to make a prayer or necessarily to have any intention, but the prayer hands exercise. And should you forget to do that upon waking up, whenever you remember during the day that you've forgotten to do your morning exercise, then you do it. So that's I found that to be a very interesting exercise because, you know, it had to do with summoning intention, for me to have the intention or the will upon first rising in the morning to do something. And then there's also an element of self-remembering or self-observation because when you... You would find out how much sleep, you know, how well you're able to carry out an intention, as you said, of doing something at 10 o'clock every day or on first rising in the morning. If that's my intention to do that, can I carry out that intention?
Can you carry it out?
Yeah.
And if you do it with practice, and that suddenly becomes very important to you, you actually wind up creating a pathway into, I call, the world of the essential self. You create that pathway in your day. If let's just say for some reason you've forgotten to do it, after it has created that tendency, you will notice it missing as much as you might notice walking out of the house without your trousers on. You won't be able to go forward in a fully prepared day without that act. You pull off the road, you stop your car, and then you'll do it, and then you'll know you can proceed. So begin to inject into your life something that might be a form of ritual for you. Post on the website, thewingsofchaos.com, post on the website what you're doing, how you're carrying out the how you're implementing the concept. We're talking about that with each other, helping each other understand. Now, make it into a practicum. Okay? Yep. Also, yeah, in BCAT, in Practical Work on Self, and there's a talk of the month. If you go to talkofthemonth.com, you can find that particular one. And
Attack
at Dawn. And you can also find a number of other talks that are associated with this kind of work, including you might want to pick a copy of the Practical Work on Self up as well. And you'll need a copy of HBM, which talks about establishing a beachhead. So those are all principles of, in a sense, walking out into the day prepared, where your inner self is prepared. We already know how to put our shoes on, okay, and get out, walk out the door. Any gorilla can do that. The question is, can you do it with a form of inner ritual? The answer is yes. There's one ingredient needed. You and your participation. So, where are we going next week? We've made it to 6 already. Sacrifice 6. This one, I think they get easier as you go along, okay? The next one is just called The Sacrifice of Control. Life of Passivity. So we won't know what that means, but this one, so go ahead and read that. It starts on page 189, and it's just a couple of pages, and let's see if we'll figure out how to sacrifice our control.
By the way, Dave, I think that this teacher portrayed here on 6, I believe that is Mayor Baba.
I think that is Mayor Baba.
The typical gesture being the gesture to be silent.
Silent. And is, you know, is and number 5?
I think 5 is one of the ones. Does anybody out there know who 5 is?
This,
I think it's one of the ones we didn't know.
Could this possibly be Claudia?
I don't think that's okay. Claudia.
Claudia Naranjo.
It looks to me like one of the Sufi teachers, but I
okay.
So there's a few of them we have an idea. It's a Catholic, there's this early one, which is obviously somebody on the Catholic collar on 2. This is one of the ones we don't know.
Okay. So go back, read the sacrifices, leave some comments on the website, the cumulative amount of work we're doing here. So thanks for coming along. Thanks for helping with our void tonight. I look forward to seeing you next week, Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Good night.
Good night, David.
Thank you very much. Good night, everybody.
Thanks.